You're listening to Not Another Origin Story, the comic book movie podcast. I'm your host, Pogues, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Benny Chapman.
Hello, Pogues.
Hi.
Well, in honor of this dog shit film, I thought maybe I'll slip in and out of a bad accent inconsistently.
Okay.
Does that sound like a good idea to you? Like, I'll just be talking normally, and at some point I'll be just like, oh, blood there was. Hey.
this movie, I think, was like, had to be, the accents had to be done by the guy who taught Nick Cage's.
Now, what is McNulty doing here? What is he? I'm sorry. That was actually kind of too good.
You have to do like a version of a New York accent as if you've never heard or met a person from New York and are not sure where it's located in the United States.
I'm punishing here. Is that good?
What's going on over here? Like, it was some of the worst. And it was confusing because they never, I don't think they ever really say where it's taking place. So I don't know why they decided to go so thick on those accents.
Yeah, it doesn't really have to have any accent.
No, it's very confusing why he has that accent.
There's sort of a standard in Marvel stuff where often, unless you're in Gotham City, like, the city is kind of generic, you know? It's like,
it's just
sort
like,
of Jersey,
it's
or
New York-y.
Sort of Boston, or just sort of New York-y. Yeah, that's fine. You don't have to go anywhere with
it. Also, like, if it is New York-y, it doesn't have to be like a New York version that's like offensive. Like, nobody in New York sounds like the people that are the two brothers that are doing accents in this movie, which are deeply upsetting. The first note I had was when Dominic West approaches us, I was like, wow, Dominic West has one of the worst accents I've ever heard. Then another character was introduced and I said, Dominic West has the second worst accent. And then a third character was introduced and I said, each person brought him down one rung.
You're solidly right, because at first it's a couple of bad gangsters. Dominic West blowing it hard, just absolutely beefing that accent.
A great, then his, like, he is literally like, what are you doing?
A Shakespearean actor, absolutely fucking it up in every
way. A guy who does a flawless American accent. I didn't even know he was British until like 2 years after I watched The Wire.
Yeah, I think some people have caught a couple of words in The Wire that are a little British-y.
Yeah, there's a little, but
there's a couple ones, but when you're doing an entire American show set in, like, not just America, but in, like, a niche part of America, like Baltimore, you know what I mean? Like, it's difficult to nail the accent. It's the same reason that when, like, we all do British accents, we do the one, like butchered Cockney.
Every time an American does a British accent, it's either, like, the most posh shit you've ever heard, or a person who doesn't know what school is.
Even though there's, like, 700 variants of the English accent all throughout, like, England and Wales and everything. You know, Dominic West pulled off, like, a Baltimore concoction for seven seasons. And here he is, absolutely beefing it for an entire overly long film. Then his brother shows up, who is not even doing a bad New York's accent. He's not even doing, his accent is, I think, head injury.
I thought Dominic West showed up on set and was like, I'm gonna do this accent, and the director, who's not American, was like, okay, because I think she's like from the Ukraine or something. I don't know where she's actually from, but I'm fairly certain she's not from the United States originally. So he does this accent, which is absurd. And then the guy who plays his brother shows up and is like, oh, that's what we're doing? And then he proceeds to do an imitation of the bad imitation of a New York accent.
Yeah.
So it's like twice removed. At one point, she's like, hello, brother. And I was like, that's not an accent. That's not how anyone in the world has ever spoken.
That was actually an exceptional interpretation of that accent. And then this is also in the context of multiple characters, like a New York cop named Martin Soap and Wayne Knight, who plays Micro, both of which are doing no accent work despite being decisive locals.
Michael Knight is doing the accent, which is a guy from New York, which is just what a person from New York sounds like, which is just a person.
And then we briefly meet a pointless character, which is like the former gang guy who's like there to who's there to, like, I don't know what, bring some guns into the picture, who is doing this offensive, like, Latin, like, accent. That,
which is obscene, because he is Hispanic.
I know, it doesn't, like... it doesn't make any sense why it's so bad, but it is ruthlessly terrible. Look, I have to issue a disclaimer, folks. I tend to be to bring a little bit of light levity to this podcast when we watch some real dog shit. This movie was so bad it made me angry, and that may come out in this podcast, and for that I apologize.
Which
whether
is
it's
weird,
the bad accents,
I didn't think
the wooden performance of fucking Ray Stevenson, RP, the absolute terrible effects work in every scene, the bad lighting, the cheesy work with the various gangs bordering on racist. Like, I mean, a plot overstuffed and badly contrived with seven different FBI plot lines for no fucking reason. I couldn't get over how bad and unwatchable this movie was.
I feel like I feel like something really bad happened to you today. It's not a good movie. It's,
no!
It's not even
no,
remotely
it
one
is
of the worst movies we've watched.
Bad.
No, I mean, we've watched so much shit that you've been like, anyway, it had some redeeming features. At least this was a movie. Like, we've watched way worse than this. It's not a good movie, and I'm telling people, don't watch it. But it's not nearly as bad as Ben's making it sound. And this is coming from me. I hate everything.
No, I mean, I had a fine day, folks. This movie offended me. This movie not to use the pun, punishingly bad. And I was irritated by almost every scene. just
wow.
To be clear.
this is a real shocking turn, guys. I'm going to have to defend a movie which I don't even enjoy. But find crazy about this, this movie is, so it's got Ray Stevenson, who's a good actor, and sadly he passed away, doing what I think is what maybe early 2000s thought PTSD was. It's not very good. Dominic West, who's a good actor, doing a horrible job. His brother, quote-unquote Looney Bin Jim, is Doug Hutchinson, who's, like, the bad guy in The Green Mile. So, like, he's been in an actual movie. Like, he was also in, what was the other thing he was in?
I know him as Eugene Toombs, I believe, in The X-Files.
Yep, yeah, he's in that. Like, yeah, he's done, like, a
love
bunch
him.
Of stuff.
Love
like,
him
he
in
was
that,
in
those,
Con Air, which
roles.
Is not really probably a great sell. But, like, he's been in things before.
Sure, yeah.
And he's, like, sort of a character actor. You wouldn't really think he's... But he's normally not horrible. And that's what's, like, so weird is, like, there's decent actors in this movie. And honestly, I think that the best performance of anyone is... like the woman, it was in Dexter, too. So, like, these people went on to be in other things. But, like, I thought the person, honestly, who was the best actor in the entire movie was Wayne Knight. Which is sort
Wayne
of
Knight,
weird.
Yeah.
It's like nothing personal to Wayne Knight, but like you would never be like, "Hey, remember the computer guy and Newman from Seinfeld? That guy is actually giving it."
Wayne
to
Knight
me.
Is the only one just delivering either a normal or an unfrustrating performance, and he's in four scenes.
Yeah, and the,
all
the
of which could be cut without consequence for the movie's plot.
The one guy is playing. So, who, like, a lot of this is actually somewhat based on a few Punisher comics.
Yes.
He is doing I don't know what. See, he's, like, first takes of an improv scene or something. I don't know. His, like, weird act
his,
is all over
his
the
stage,
place.
His stage direction was recently neutered dog. It's my guess is what they made him act like. Like he's just so odd. He was so ready to, like, back out of every scene that he was in slowly while the camera panned away from him. That seemed to be his whole vibe, and I don't know why.
Because he's not a very good actor, apparently. I don't know. He just was not good. The woman who played the wife of, like, the murdered FBI agent was real bad.
Really interesting character. Let me just look at my notes here. Damsel, distress.
She has nothing going on.
That is her whole character.
She also delivers a performance which made me think if there was more written for her in the script, they were like, take it out. Because she is, like, at one point is holding a gun on Frank Castle, and she's like, he's bringing her money because he accidentally shot her husband who was undercover with the mob. And he's, like, bringing her money to be like, this is to, like, help with the kid in the future. And she's like, no, you don't get to do that. It's like, oh, God, this was supposed to be an emotional scene. And it's being delivered like a person upset about the temperature of their soup. You know what I mean? It was just very, like, I was like, oh, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, and then lastly, the last puzzle piece we have is Colin Salmon, who's a character actor who tends to have this sort of stern, like military, special forces, FBI kind of vibe. And that's fine. He delivers that the same way he does it in most of his roles, which is enjoyable. But his character is just written into the script as one of the most... like, name your... Just give your cops cool names. Like, Paul Badansky is not...
there was some confusing name choices, which I could only assume had to come from the comic book, because otherwise I can't...
Yeah, it had to. Don't pick Badansky. It's just... Anyway, his name is Paul Budiansky, and his character is just listed in the script as FBI, comma, motively confused.
I don't know what his FBI guy, comma, constipated. Everything he delivers, like, he's mad about things, but you can't be sure why.
He's the first character I think I've seen in a long time that I think is actively being rewritten between scenes. Like, at first he seems, like, bent on revenge, and then he seems like he's, like, revealing weird stuff about doing cocaine, and then suddenly he's, like,
yeah, that part
focused
was
on
the most, and then they're like,
saving,
they,
yeah.
I also loved that he was like, my partner wouldn't roll on me, so they put him into undercover. That's not
what
how undercover works. It requires such a specific skill set that they would never just put a random dude in. He would, like, instantly be found out and killed. Also, why was he taking a dump on a catwalk? That was still the part of the movie that confused me all the way to the end. Was I was like, wait, when he walks out, there's, like, clearly the sound of a toilet flushing, but he's on a catwalk above a factory. Why would there be a toilet up there?
I don't think there's anyone who just gets reassigned to undercover work.
Yeah,
undercover
it's,
work.
It's not like a punishment.
It's not like McNulty being passed over to Marine cop duty in The Wire. That's like an actual position.
Yes, putting a detective back to being a uniform. That would be a punishment because it's like a loss
or
of
being,
pay
or
and
being,
it's a worse job.
Being sent to the pawn shop unit. I'm going to use Wire references this whole way through.
Because let's face it, the first couple of seasons are amazing. It falls apart at the end. Don't even bother to watch the last one.
But it's insane to think that he was given an undercover mob role.
Yes, and like a very important one where these guys are smuggling in chemical weapons. And it's like, that was his punishment? Also, usually they don't send people undercover who have wives and children. It's not necessarily the most active, it's usually not great to do. It was
also,
just,
I just want,
to me, like, so crazy.
I know we're on it, but I also want to figure it out. Is what happened here is that a superior officer says, hey, Paul Badansky, stop doing cocaine. And then he said, I'm not doing cocaine. And his partner, and then he turned with, the chief turned to his partner and said, is he doing cocaine? No, he's not. That's it.
It appears to be that they like were busting drug dealers.
Why would the cocaine
and then it was going missing. And then they would ask and he would say, oh, my partner's not stealing it. I was like, I feel like that would just get both of you arrested because the coke is still missing and neither one of you will admit to taking it. So I think they would just arrest both of you.
If
you're like, oh, they're both stealing it, obviously.
And either way, even if they couldn't arrest you because of no solid proof, if your commanding officer suspected that kind of impropriety going on, why wouldn't he send Badansky?
Yes, it's weird. Badansky appears to keep his position, which seems very weird.
And he treats it like he sent him away and I had to like change everything about myself because of what I did. And it's like, again, he could just quit.
That's the other thing. You could stop being an FBI agent. I mean, it wouldn't be great for you that late in life to find a new job, but I feel like you still could.
You don't have to do it. It's just insane. It's one of a bunch of wild, like, as if an AI interpreted, like, cop drama, stuff.
He was, and I did look it up, Lexi Alexander's German. I don't know if, like, she had any input, or if it's, like, the person who wrote it was just trying to hit, like, the hallmarks of, like, the cop part, which is, like, cops don't like the FBI. The FBI is either incompetent or corrupt. They're always hard asses. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like he was every version of an FBI agent from, like, yeah, NCIS. 100%. Or, you know what
it's
I mean?
Like,
or Law and Order.
You fed scripts to an AI, yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird. And his point, like, I will say this. If you listen to the mini-episode, I said I remember thinking this movie wasn't terrible. I don't know why I thought that, because it is very boring. It's so long. But it's like, I told Ben I need to stop drawing when I watch these movies. I think that, like, yeah. I block out the parts I don't like.
That's the way to watch this is to watch it while doing any other task.
No, here's this the way to great, watch this is this, to start this, turn the TV off, turn on an iPad, and just watch the Punisher TV show on Netflix.
No, I think you almost had it. Here's the way to watch this. Turn off your television. Don't let any sound or visuals hit your eyeballs and you'll feel a lot better. The pistache.
I would say look up a clip of just Dominic West's accent and his brother's accent just so you can hear the worst accents you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah. But we were talking about how it felt like someone just trying to, like, capture, like, broad strokes of different genre, like cop genre. That sticks all throughout. There's a desperate attempt to feel noir in this, like, with shooting lots of, like, Frank Castle walking along, like, neon signs, which just feels weird and out of place. But nothing is worse than the very...
At one point, they show him going back after he's, like, killed a bunch of mobsters, accidentally killed an FBI guy, and he's just walking across, like, a street in New York in a full, like, bomb disposed...
Yeah.
Like, armor
with the Punisher
and,
logo,
like,
on it.
Like, 16 pistols on him, and nobody reacts. I'm like, this is post-September 11th. That motherfucker ain't getting anywhere.
He went into the subway, and it's like, I'm on the subway most days. I see people on the subway. I'm well aware of my surroundings. If I saw that guy come down the stairs, I am bolting. I am absolutely bolting for the other side. And then he, like, in broad daylight, in broad light, in front of 15 people, like, jumps onto the tracks. It's like, Jesus Christ, how have you not been caught yet?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm like, also, you guys are aware that, like, maybe they didn't know this, but especially post-September 11th, there were police stationed in the subway. Like, a cop has definitely seen this dude one, although they do imply that the police actually don't want to catch him, but...
Right, of course. But what I was saying earlier is that, like, the absolute ridiculous, like, cliché-ness of, like, all the genre they try to cram into this movie is no more apparent than the very beginning of the movie, where it's Dominic West's Billy character, like, coming into, like, his mafioso boss's, like wood den, and he's in this chair being like, Billy, it's me, the boss. Hey, have a cup of ghoul, and we can
it
talk
is
about
my,
the money.
My favorite part.
Oh
is
my god!
When he
it's
walks
like,
up.
It's like I'm watching an SNL sketch.
When he walks in,
no,
when he
I'm
first
sorry.
Walks
to,
in.
To be clear, Pogues, it's like I'm watching a Mad TV sketch.
Wow, Mad TV had some great bits.
I know.
When he walks in, he's like, you look great. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm shitting in a bag. I was like, what is even also, like, I was very confused. They were trying him as the head of a crime family, and they had a witness that saw him do what? Like, the head of a crime family doesn't commit any crimes. It's like the whole premise. He tells people to commit crimes, and they commit them for him, and he's just in charge. Sure, he is accessory to every crime committed, but, like, what did the witness see that they had to kill him? Like, I was very confused, and also it sounded like they had killed the district attorney, but then it turned, then later they were like, they killed this guy who was testifying. It was like, make up your mind, who did he kill?
I could spend 6 hours talking about the insanity of what, like, the scriptwriter thought was how, like, general law works, and I know that these cop shows play just sort of, like, loosey-goosey with this stuff to make it interesting for viewers, because I think actual cop procedurals based on real law would be wildly boring. But you still have to adhere to some, like, basic rules of logic. nothing is more flouted than, like, in the third act, when they take this fucking Batman Two-Face character, Billy, like, Jigsaw, and bring him and arrest him finally after he, like, publicly murdered 10 people and 2 police officers, one of them with a sword, and they bring him in, and he's like,
they give him complete immunity, which is so, it's not how immunity works.
And they give him specific information on how to kill a few other American citizens at their own discretion.
And they let him keep $12 million that was used by chemical weapons. I was like, this is not a real immunity. Or, like, they would just be like, well, we're just going to send you to Guantanamo and torture you for a while.
It's like, it's the FBI. They would certainly offer that and then just shoot you in that warehouse and say you were a casualty. Like, there's absolutely no reason to give this fucking maniac with the, like, ridiculous, like Batman villain face and be like, yeah, just get full immunity, go kill some American citizens, and I suppose have all this millions of dollars that we put up for you. I mean, I don't understand it. It's so fucking stupid. It's difficult to even put it into words, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
There is, because so after the Punisher shows up to kill the crime family, which,
oh god,
which could have been, Jesus in Christ. My mind, I must have just made up a better movie, but in my mind I remember the scene of him, like, or maybe I'm thinking of a fucking Batman cartoon, maybe I am thinking of that scene in Year One. Anyways, he, like, comes in and just lights a flare and then walks up and cuts a dude's head off with a knife, which is very
Let's talk about this version of Frank Castle, who employs a strategy I like to call strategic / unstrategic, where he does one strategic things and then immediately undoes it. Like, let's say, let's cut the power. Fantastic. Night vision goggles, man, you got the full advantage. Lay a flare and get on the table?
Nope. It works for him. Nobody not even gets it. What I think is, like there's a scene similar to that in a Garth Ennis comic where he does do that and he lights a flare and he just, like, but he's just holding, like, an M16 and just starts shooting it. Like, he's just like, I'm here to, like, for, you know, to punish you or whatever. And then you just start shooting everybody before anyone even has a moment to be like, wait, what the fuck's going on? So they kind of miss out, and this also becomes one
that would
of
the make
things.
More sense, because if you were to, like, burst into the room and get on the table, having a gun and just sort of unloading on these people at the table would be great. But he kills 4 people before they cut back to the rest of the group being like, "Hey, boss, should we get up and do something?" Like, he cut that lady's head off, just clean and easy. And then he put the knife away and changed guns. At any point, should we stand up and do a single fucking thing? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ludicrous. What also befuddled me about this movie is that I had always mistook this movie, because I'd always sort of heard just chatter about it because I'd never seen it. And, like, my understanding was that it was, like, this very R-rated, like, gritty movie that just, like, wasn't paced very well or something. Like, my interpretation was always that it was, like, very realistic and very gritty. The posters make it seem, like, super, like R-rated, like, hard, violent, you know, kind of movie. And it really isn't. It is so schlocky and so cartoony. I mean, obviously, it goes for a heavy violence angle with, like, heads being cut off and stuff. But it this movie proves to me how wrong I'd understood what this kind of movie was when he, like, takes the time to, like, mount his knees up on the chandelier and do 14 spins. Like,
so that's just chandeliers are made to rotate. I do know that this is something. If you ever, I was trying to remember why I knew so much about this movie and the director, and then I remembered she's on an episode of How Did This Get Made, where they interview her, and she talks a lot about this movie. And I forgot, one of the things that happened was when she was going to make the movie, there was that shooting in one of the many mass shootings in the United States. I want to say, like, Texas or Virginia or somewhere. And so she decided to go from what was originally she had planned to be, like, because she's actually, like, a former stunt person. She had planned a very gritty, realistic, but then her and the studio talked and they were like, we want the violence to be really over the top so it's not real, because the dude who committed the massacre had a Punisher poster, like, in his room or something. And they were like, we don't want people to, like, get the wrong idea. And so they went really over the top to try to, like, make it less... I don't know.
The logic
doesn't really make any sense to me.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
The idea was that they made it like cartoony violence that a person couldn't really do. No one would try to emulate him. I guess was like their like her thought process was, if I make the violence cartoony, then I don't have to worry about anybody seeing it and being like, I want to do that because physically it's impossible to do. I guess was her idea, which I can see. I mean, that's always been the problem. Well, not always. That's been the problem with the Punisher since America became the land of mass shootings, where it's like, it's hard to take a character who's like, yeah, this guy's just a mass murderer. He's the good guy. And you're like, but...
He's a mass murderer.
Like, I get he's only killing criminals, but like, this dude's killing a lot of people.
I don't envy anyone trying to do a Punisher film with that context, but besides a couple of kills, like when the Punisher strangely punches a man's whole face into itself, which happens at some point in a scene I don't truly understand.
Where he punches the guy, his fist through a guy's face?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
The rest of the movie is mostly him just pointing guns at people and shooting them with bullets. It's not very, unrealistic in, I would say, 80% of the kills. You know, he's just shooting guns at people until their heads explode or, like, blood comes out of their body. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I don't particularly think that she achieved cartoonish violence. It's just regular violence with bad effects. Because they keep, there's, like, at least 7 times in this movie where they cut to a victim of one of Castle's murders, that is, his head is like a glistening Play-Doh doll. Like, it is, I can't believe how bad the special effects are in this movie. I often don't even notice bad special effects, and I could not recoil more during scenes where they cut to a head that looked like they painted a watermelon and then shot a firecracker at it. It is atrocious for a movie that had, I imagine, at least a decent budget. I mean, it's astonishing. It's truly astonishing. It happens a lot, especially in the beginning. There are so... I want to make a super cut of these, like, fucking watermelon head kills. They're just garbage. Garbage, garbage.
Honestly, I don't remember any of this because I apparently wasn't paying that close of attention. The thing I love, though, is... So they went for... To me, this felt like very much like Garth Ennis' first run on The Punisher, which is what, like, kind of the first Punisher movie is based on, which is the shitty... That stuff is, like, so fucking cartoony and stupid and just, like, asinine. Like, every bad incident Garth Ennis has, which he has a lot of, is the first run of, like, I think it's called Welcome Back, Frank. Like, you know, it was just... It wasn't good. And they based the first one on it, which is why I found it funny that Thomas Jane turned this one down, because he said this one was too comic booky. Which I was like, wait, wasn't the other one?
Yeah, the other
one.
Also,
in your version, they literally murdered every person in your extended family.
Yeah, holy shit.
On a vacation in Hawaii.
I mean, again, I think this is a bad movie, and I don't disagree with his decision to not do it. But it is strange, like, I read the same thing. Like, it is strange, the justifications for not doing this movie. Because it is just as schlocky and just as sort of campy, but somehow less enjoyable than the original Punisher film.
This movie also, though, feels like it has some of the same problems that the Punisher does, and that a lot of comic book movies has, which is just, it's not paced well. They try to introduce way too many characters, and you don't care
way
about any
many.
Of them. The damsel in distress storyline could have been cut out, and there could have been a million other reasons for Castle to show up at the end. The ending could have been amazing if they had done, if you made this movie now, and you took out the dumb cop storyline, and it's just like, Punisher does something, there's this bad guy, he wants to go get him because he's consolidating crime or whatever, and he's holed up in this old hotel, and every floor has like a different gang on it that he's employing, and then he did it like Raid the Redemption, or Raid, you know what I mean, or like where it's just like him going up floor by floor killing people, and it's very John Wick, like gun-fu sort of stuff. that could be a great movie. In fact, I think that's one of the John Wick movies. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it could have been a great idea. However, the fight scenes at the end are mostly just shots of him firing a gun in which you don't see what he's hitting or shooting at. And then just seeing him reload, which is cool. He learned how to combat reload. I mean, good for him, but not particularly interesting to watch. And as you pointed out, it's not tactical. He's literally just walking down hallways shooting people. The only thing he does, like, even remotely tactical is, like, one point he puts a grenade in, like, a paint can and then kicks
yeah.
And that's not even that tactical. It's just really hard to kick a grenade. And it, like, goes down and blows up. And I was like, oh, that's something. But it's very...
You know...
I don't know. It is very dumb.
It's like, if you want to go, like, ludicrous, you know, you gotta be, like, Commando. You know what I mean? Like, way
yeah, yeah.
over the top.
Blow off some steam,
way
Maxwell.
Past stage. I want, you know, like Schwarzenegger kicking a hut over and like holding on to two like light machine guns. That's fucking nonsense and it's fantastic. Or yeah, you want to watch something where you watch the Punisher be clever, because that's what's interesting. You know that he's going up against odds that are outside of standard odds that he would succeed. So the idea would be that he would like fool people, like he would trick people into coming down a hallway, that he would, you know, lead them into a trap, that he would have a plan in place, like have backup guns stashed at the location that he would draw people to, like interesting stuff where you're like, oh man, this guy's unstoppable, he's thought of everything, you know, that's fun. Because when like you said, when he's just like walking down the hallway with a regular assault rifle that seems to be shooting off whole limbs, which
yeah.
I guess was part of the unrealistic
just,
part that you're talking about.
It's like an M4, and they just put like a bunch of shit on it to make it look like a bigger gun than it is.
I'm not really a gun guy, but I'm pretty sure that old gun wasn't going to be doing that. Yeah, it's not like, again, other than him, like, I guess putting like the grenade launcher through a door or something. He doesn't do anything particularly of note that would stick in your memory more than 10 seconds after it was done.
It's also confusing because, like, he gets up there and you watch the scenes and he reloads, like, 4 times and then he's out of ammo and you're like, you brought 4 magazines? Like, you know there's, like, 300 people in this building and your entire body, like, why don't you have a combat load? Like, they make those jackets for military people, you know, where you can carry, like, 12 magazines at once at least. I was like, this dude brought the bare minimum you can have. It's very weird. And then, like, he's, like, completely out of ammo by the time he gets up top. And I'm like, he couldn't have fired that many bullets. Like, it was only 2 floors.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem to understand reloading, because throughout the entire movie, he seems to be shooting guns and then disposing of them. I don't know why.
Well,
like,
that's,
I don't know,
that's
what...
classic, like, action film. People think that looks cool, and it's very confusing why you would drop a weapon which you could just reload.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. Like, Wayne Knight is bringing him just, like, duffels of guns, because he yes. knows he's gonna, like, shoot one and then just drop it. And then, like, later on... He shoots this guy into the roof and he stuffs it down a vent. I'm like,
he has a mini rocket launcher,
Frank.
And like a sniper rifle. He fires twice and then
he puts it down.
I was like, why are you getting? Why you only do that when somebody sees you kill the person? You know what I mean? Like, you shoot the president and you hide the gun. You don't do it when it's just some random gangbanger on a roof.
They all know it's you, Frank. They all know it's you.
That's a lot of anonymity.
Everyone actively knows the Punisher is Frank Castle. It's well established throughout the entire world. And it's not like these guns were bought at a fucking gun shop or something.
I do like that there's like some real social commentary on how easy it is to buy guns in the United States crammed into a movie where a guy kills 80 people. Like, I'm not sure the message of anti-gun or gun control really.
Yeah.
Speaking of the people he kills on the roof, this guy was the most confusing character in a movie full of very confusing and stupid characters.
This blew my mind.
These guys show up who are doing some of the laziest, weakest-ass parkour I've ever seen in my life. Like, the office parkour.
I was gonna say, look up the scene in The Office where they're just sort of, like, jumping on the couch and then off the couch. And that's
and
say, yelling
and
parkour.
Parkour, yeah.
That is exactly parkour. What they're doing.
And this guy shows up, and they're, like, they're like frat guys. They're like, yeah, bro. And then this guy walks in, and he's dressed like a guy who would sell you drugs in the 90s. Like, you remember those, like, sweaters that look like they were, like, rugs? You know what I mean? Do you remember those? Anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
He comes in, and he's black. He's got, like, dreadlocks. And he walks in, and he's all of a sudden super fucking Irish. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
They never... It's just such a weird, like, why is he so Irish? And they're in the middle of New York City. And confusingly, like, cartoon Irish. Like, oh, they like guitars.
Yeah, confusingly, he's doing a bad Irish accent. It's insane. He could do any accent or no accent. He's
no accent.
His character's description, everything about his character, the appearance, everything, gives him carte blanche to do whatever accent he's want. He's clearly not based on someone from the comics. He can do whatever he wanted. Whoever picked Irish.
Also, he's not Irish in real life, in case somebody thought that was a possibility. He is not
it's
Irish.
Insane. It's also, utterly insane.
He is, like, he does, a ton of voice work. He's, like, a pretty well-known voice actor, which is what made it even more confusing. When I saw him, I was like, that dude looks really familiar. And so I went to look up who he was. I was like, oh, that's right. He's like, he's been on like episodes of Critical Role and stuff. He's like a well-known like stuntman, and then he did voice work. And it's like, he's one of the, I think he's the dude who gets killed first in Mortal Kombat too.
Fantastic.
But oh, he's doing this Irish accent, and in my mind I'm like, dude, you make a living doing voices. Why is your Irish accent so bad? And, like, they give him money, and they're supposed to go pay people off. And he goes to leave, and the guy's like, where the fuck you going? And he's like, would you mind if I use the roof? Oh, thanks, you're a real angel. I was like, that's not how Irish people sound. Like, and I'm like, why?
That's so exact. And I couldn't believe it, because...
At first, I thought he was doing the most offensive and incorrect Jamaican accent. And then I was like, oh, he's supposed to be Irish, I think. Because they later say his name's, like, McGinty.
And I was like, oh, is he supposed to be Irish? Yeah, it's McGinty.
Yeah, it's very
weird. I also really enjoy that you told me during the recording of the mini episode that the director knew, having spoken to a lot of Punisher fans, like, of what they wanted to see and what they didn't want to see, and someone had made a discreet comment about, like, don't put parkour in here, and you had mentioned that she had, like, put in, like, a little, like bit where she blew up a parkour guy with a rocket.
I did not remember them being in the movie for, like,
that's the insane minutes. Thing. Your description told me that there'd be a point during a fight scene where someone would try to parkour away from the Punisher, and he would just, like, rocket launcher him.
That's, in my mind, that's that was funny. That was, like, my memory. Is they died when they first showed up. Like, that they were coming, and they were, like, jumping over the fence, and he just blew one of them up.
They have more screen time than Wayne. They have more screen time than Wayne Knight.
Oddly, though, not as much screen time as Wayne Knight's mom, who can only watch cooking shows.
They have multiple sequences of them parkouring in and out of scenes and doing parkour and talking about parkour. And
which
they have
was,
perhaps...
yeah, that, it was really confusing, because I was like, she specifically said she put it in because people hated parkour. Why would you show it so much? And again, the worst parkour. Like, the absolute bare minimum parkour.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was wild.
And I need to go dig up the script and figure out what they were called. They had the stupidest name. It was like McGinty and the Free Flow Boys or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
They did have a horrible name, didn't they?
It was like someone was like, don't put parkour. And she's like, haha, I'll put in a parkour Easter egg. And then someone didn't Google Easter egg. And like, Easter egg's one third of the movie, right?
That's McGinty and his urban free flow gang.
Oh, God, that's the least intimidating. Oh, that's Bill and his hacky sack crew. You gotta watch out for them.
Oh, man.
That's Doug and the LARP boys. don't piss them off.
That's Chibi Joe and the frozen yogurt guys. They really like yogurts. Also, they sell Coke.
Oh. Tommy and the Warhammer buddies. Yeah, watch out for them. They're really accurate.
The they like to measure distances.
Yeah, they know distance really well. I gotta watch out. I've lost the thread of this movie. I just couldn't even follow like the consistent plot. I mean, as far as I could gather,
there's
like a non-consensual FBI guy who's embedded in this gang, who I guess was making money and then decided to get involved in like shipping terrorist materials.
So what it basically is, this guy runs the dock. Whatever Jigsaw's name was before, he like controls the dock. Like he's the gang that controls the dock. So when people bring stuff
in, season two of The Wire, I got it.
They bribe him, and that's sort of what his character is. These Russians want to bring something in, and he says they'll give you 10 mil. And then for some reason, he tells his boss, who he knows won't like it, that it's some sort of biological weapon. Why wouldn't you just say it's heroin? You know what I mean? And then they say very racist things about people from the Middle East. Twice, which seemed upsetting.
Yeah.
But, like, the confusing part of the plot is this. He is a crime lord. All right? He appears to only have the money that is in his safe, which is not a great way to be a crime boss. Because you kind of need money. He had 200,000 in there, and the undercover FBI agent says, well, we had to launder the money to make it, you know, we had to clean the money by laundering it through the strip club you own. Like, he says the name of the strip club as if he owns it, which makes sense. That's a great way to launder money is strip clubs. The guy says, go get it tomorrow. The rest of the plot, or part of the plot, is that they think the FBI agent stole the money, even though he told them what he did with it and where it was, and they could just go get it. But he acts as if he has no income now and no money whatsoever. Also, he has insurance, we find out. Which blew my mind in the scene where they talk about how he had to go to a free clinic. And he's like, yeah, they said I missed a payment on my insurance. Could you believe that? What monster is paying for insurance?
I don't understand.
How do you even, like... I mean, one, you're paying outside of a group rate, which is going to cost you, but...
Again, this whole movie is like an AI wrote it. Like, it only has a rough understanding on how human society works.
Well, it felt like that was supposed to be commentary on the U.S. healthcare system, but it's like, no, this doesn't make any sense. He's a mobster. He would never have healthcare, because when you're a criminal, you can't go to the hospital. They tend to report you.
Nothing beat for me was after, like, I thought the scene in which McNulty here falls into the glass bottle, the glass bottle machine, drawn up by, like, I assume Lovecraft. Like, I don't know who made this horrible machine
I have to believe that that's vaguely a real machine, that that's how they break glass up for recycling, and I'm gonna believe it until someone proves me wrong.
Just
like a thing that essentially is just a giant blender bottom that they just throw glass bottles
into. But it has weird spires coming out of it. Like,
like a blender, like to rotate it. I didn't understand what the fuck. I was like, boy, that's a pretty ballsy way to kill somebody, is to like turn them on into a glass refinery, which was neat. But then he lived.
Yeah, no, that was neat, and it was grisly.
While they were showing it, I was like, how did they do this without like seriously injuring this dude?
It was fascinating. It was a cool scene that I thought was like, you know, Ed promised me a lot that he fell into this H.R. Giger bottle machine. But then he comes out and he's dressed up like one of the guys from the Dick Tracy movie that we watched some time ago.
He looks like at one point he's cosplaying Two-Face from the Batman Forever movie.
It is atrociously done makeup. It is so unconceivably bad. Always shot in full light, just so we can all get look at the bad effects.
The first time they showed him in, like, broad daylight, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Why would you purposely show this close up? It's clear he just has like a rubber mask taped to his face.
Yeah, nothing beat the scene following him leaving the plastic surgeon's office when he's driving in the SUV, because there's something so fucking funny about how bad so much of this movie was constructed. But nothing beat the fact that the two guys he works with are just sort of like normal mafioso guys. Yeah. Like,
well, the
it's
one
just
guy
kind of like
reminded me of what's that guy in Parks and Rec, I think it is, the two rich people. I think it's Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
The one's Jenny Slate and it's her brother or whatever. That's what he reminded me of. He has like the
John Ralphio. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's absolutely should have been played by Ben Schwartz. It would have been incredible. But they're both playing like pretty straightforward mafioso character design. Like the one guy is just sort of like
looks like he could be in The Sopranos, and then the young kid is just really into cocaine.
The one kid, it's a pretty common like pastiche and like or one common like concept in these mafioso stuff, where like there's like a young son of a don who's like always like drugged up and kind of wild and like, you know, like they're both like pretty classic archetypes, and they never do anything strange or odd outside of those archetypes. They are down the letter for them. Like that one guy is just like, he always seems like he wants to stop at the gas station and like buy some beef jerky. You know what I mean? Like,
he just
seems
like
a down to earth
meatballs.
Yeah, just a down to earth guy, and sort of like a coked up like a son of like someone influential in the gang. And they're just hanging out with this Batman villain, and like they're just entertaining all of his nonsense. He goes and he frees his insane brother, who starts eating the organs of one of the orderlies. He's like, hey boss, should I get his medicine or maybe grab some of his clothes or what? Hey, you want to get some food after this? Like, he's just like on board for all of
the scene where they go to get him. And one, he's in like a mental institution, so he's definitely been drugged up for like a long period of time. But the orderly comes in and is eating his applesauce. And then, do you remember what Looney Bin Jim says to him?
Well, real quick aside here.
His seamless accent.
Real quick aside here is that the mafioso guys call him Looney Bin Jim.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the nickname he's earned for being kind of crazy. It's insane to me that someone who works at a facility like this would come in and be like, hey, Looney Bin Jim.
I also love the way he says his name's Jim. It's not Looney Bin Jim. It's not LBJ. I'm like, people were shorting
LBJ?
Former president?
Let's not forget, this is the same scene where this now, like, cartoonish Batman villain is like, call me Jigsaw. And you're like, huh?
Yeah, and he's like, don't call Looney Bin Jim. It's like, but...
That's not how a nickname also comes about, right? Like, you would be like, I'm upset about my facial injuries, and, like, people would rudely call you Jigsaw behind your back because your face is like a bunch of puzzle pieces. And then that would earn a reputation, and eventually you just sort of embrace
it,
I guess.
You just go with it because it's too much effort to tell people no.
And it strikes fear in people's heart. Whatever, fine. But you don't just sit in the car and be like, call me Jigsaw.
Also, why, like, the guys in the front seat are just, like, listening to, like...
Yeah,
talk radio,
I would kill
like a Louis
for
Prima
a
tape he brought with it.
I would kill for a button that would just make some scenes go for like one more minute, just because I would like to see, like, he's like, call me Jigsaw, and then there's this like pregnant silence until he's like, someone says,
and
like,
then
well, you want
like,
to know,
gas is up again.
you see the Dodgers played last night. They did terrible. You guys
hungry? Never should have left the Brooklyn. So when they go to get his brother, they let him go.
LBJ, right?
Yeah, LBJ. They go to get LBJ. And he's like, I'm gonna get my applesauce back. That's the way he talks.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my god, the applesauce line. It stood out. Like, his accent was really bad the whole movie, but he was like, yeah, his opening line was like, I want to get my applesauce. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
In my tummy.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And then he jumps on the guy, and then like in a cartoon fashion, they're behind like a wall, and the guy's screaming, and then he pops his head up, and he's eating what appears to be like a candy version of an orange. It was so bright red. And I was like, wait, how did he get inside of a human being with his bare hands? Like, that's not an easy, like, and this guy was very heavy, the man he's attacking. So even if he was like biting into him, it would take a long time to get to organs.
He was doing some.
And I guess we're supposed to be like, oh man, this guy's crazy. But I was like, what is happening? Why? And also, his like, whole character... why would you free a guy who is literally eating a human being in front of you?
Yeah. And he doesn't provide anything interesting. Like I don't mean to be like too mean here. I'm an out-of-shape guy. Doug Hutchinson is an out-of-shape guy in this. And, like, that's fine. A lot of mafiosos and Sopranos are terrifying. And they're
really heavy.
And they're wildly out-of-shape. But their technique is just having a gun and being ruthless with it.
He's having like some sort of like having multiple of you.
Yeah, his character is like an unarmed bite guy. Like, yeah, his whole character is that he
so many people
is that he bites people. And in like the final sequence, he bites Frank Castle on the neck. And when we cut to it, you think he's almost like, you would expect how like when someone is like defending themselves in like a brutal fight and they like rip someone's throat out.
I mean, if you bite somebody in the throat hard enough, you can like puncture their jugular.
You expect that he like ripped flesh off of Frank's neck, but it is a hickey.
It looks like they were making out a little too rough. Also,
it is just a red hickey.
While he's fighting the Punisher, he at one point like punches him in the side, and keep in mind the Punisher's wearing like a full like plate bulletproof vest, so this wouldn't even really, I mean he probably couldn't even feel it, and he was like, blood in your urine, early sign of kidney failure. And I was like, is this guy WebMD now? And then he like kicks him in his knee, and he's like, that's a torn meniscus. I'm like, no, it takes a lot to tear your meniscus. Getting kicked in your knees probably not gonna do it, especially because he just stands up afterwards like nothing happened.
And let's not forget that, like, at this point, Frank Castle has been shot in his bulletproof vest 15 times at this point in the film.
He gets shot.
He's been shot over and over.
Like, and he reacts as if, like, someone slapped him. Like,
yeah.
If you get shot wearing a bulletproof vest, it, like, breaks your ribs. The impact is still there. The bullet just doesn't go through. It still is really painful. People, you can actually die from being shot while wearing a bulletproof vest because it can break your ribs. It's really dumb.
And again,
it felt very much like modern day Marvel movies where it's like, you know, they like throw Captain America through like a steel girder and he gets up and starts fighting, and then later somebody punches him and he's like on the ground. He's like, it's like, wait, what hurts you? Like, you guys gotta draw a line. Either you could throw him through a building and he's fine, but like he can't be tired later from getting kind of slapped around. And that's what this felt like, is like he's supposed to be hurt, but then it's like, well, I've seen him be shot 12 times. And then I thought the like sort of climax scene with the kids and Micro was like so dumb. I was expecting, because I'll be honest too, by the end of the movie I was like, I don't think I watched this whole movie. Like, I think I got to the part where they were going to go into the hotel and I was like, this is going to be great. Like, he's going to fight his way up. And then I stopped watching the movie because I didn't remember any of the rest of the movie.
Well, you've forgotten about two of the least aware cops that have ever existed in the history of movies.
Awesome.
Two cops that just walk into a room that's clearly been the sign of, like, an extreme disturbance, and a bloodied man let them in, and they just turn their backs right to him and don't react as he, like, attacks
them.
They
open the door to a man who has, like, a broken nose with, like, tape over it. He has cuts all over his face from when he jumped through a mirror earlier. And they're like, is everything okay? And he goes, no, officers. It's not.
And let's
okay.
be clear.
I would not go any. Even if I thought that guy was hurt, I wouldn't go into the room.
Eugene Toombs opens the door and was like, officers, I spilled my applesauce. I would just be unloading my gun immediately.
He opens his mouth and that exit comes out, and you're like, well, this guy definitely is wearing a
sweatshirt
underneath of his coat.
This guy doing baby talk is absolutely
this guy
absolute.
Doing Bronx baby talk is deeply upsetting.
And what's better is canonically, we know that fucking Soap called them. Like, we know that Soap called the police officers and said, hey, the widow of the former FBI agent and her helpless daughter are being stalked by the mob, and they open the door and goes, "Hey, mob guy that's been clearly been in a recent fight, is there anything going on?"
Just the
here?
Fact you open the door and it's a man, you'd be like, "Well, yeah, we were told to check on a single mother, on a widow and her daughter. This is definitely a dude. I don't want
just come on in here and
genders,
turn your back on me." And then ask, they walk in and they look at the cocaine guy and are like, "Hey, what's happening?"
It was one of the dumbest. And then, it was so dumb. And then the black guy's like, "I'll take care of it." It's like, two cops just got killed in there. Do you guys understand? There's like 60,000 police officers in New York City.
Yeah.
Call more. Just a handful. I'm not even saying like the whole force. This doesn't have to be a Dark Knight Rises situation, but just maybe grab 10 guys. And then he like goes in and it's like the dumbest scene, and then they arrest him and he's like, "We want immunity," and they're like, "Okay." I was like, why was this scene in the movie? why arrest him? Why couldn't they have just gotten away? It serves no purpose.
Yeah, and again, I couldn't get over that because he's like, "You guys are stupid. I run the docks, and there's a shipment coming in tonight, and I know where it is. I really wish there was a pause," and then the FBI agent's like, "At the docks?"
Yeah. You mean we'll just go and wait at the docks and...
"We know where the docks are. Water is finite, you fucking idiot."
We were literally staking out your base.
You know
the
water comes
just...
We'll you know how the water comes docks. Up to the land, and then we meet the land, and that's where we put the docks? Well, there's only, like, one of those, so...
It's like, yeah, it's like, we were literally outside your place, remember? We broke in, and we found your body? You don't remember that? Like, we know exactly where this deal's going now.
If we walk down the docks, do you think we'll just see, like, a bunch of Russians standing around a black SUV?
Yeah,
probably it, right?
We'll just look for the 26 black SUVs with tinted windows and some Euro trash. We'll get it.
I also like the idea that they could, like, potentially, like, back out of the deal and, like, just keep him under arrest and, like, you know, tell
that
everyone
was,
they didn't,
that was
they didn't
also
do a deal.
The thing I loved is they were like, we need immunity. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, you got it. Tell us.
I would love
your lawyer's not even here. Yeah, definitely tell us.
Yeah, you've got immunity, in quotes, I'm doing under the table. But more importantly, even if they did sign some sort of an official deal and then did this and then backed out of it, like, what, is this guy going to show up in a courtroom, Jigsaw, and be like, "Hey, I know I murdered a bunch of people, but these guys backed out of some paperwork."
His immunity was only for his previous crimes. I'd be like, "Yeah, you just sold chemical warfares to terrorists. That's a new crime." It's so stupid the reason he gets off. And then, like, they go after the girl to, again, get the Punisher, whose whole thing is... he kills mobsters. Like, do you really need to add a layer to get him to come? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just be like, "We're here, and if you don't come, we're gonna find that girl and kill him." And he would have just showed up anyways. And it's really dumb.
We don't even have time to do a lightning round of the stupid shit that happens after that. Is it fucking rubber masked McNulty doing a Patton speech in front of a flag to different racist gangs?
What I can only describe is like if Chairman Mao's outfits were made by the guy who made John Elton's outfits. It's like the most frilly, like, communist military suit. Yeah, I guess she did that as a bit. I feel like as a non-American, she thought this stuff was going to land, and it's like, it doesn't make any sense to Americans, but she saw a recruiting video and thought that it was, like, really funny that that's how recruiters try to get people to join the military. It's like, yeah, we all know recruiters are stupid, like,
and there's
reason
multiple
why there's
scenes.
Not a lot, you know, like, they're literally trying to take advantage of people, so...
There's multiple transitional scenes of McNulty and his weird brother. Like, at one point, they're doing, like a comical... like funny walk down the street, like,
yeah,
to like go talk
to
one gang.
They're supposed to be like they're marching, but it looks more like they're goose stepping.
And there's another scene where they're in like an SUV in broad daylight with his like brother doing like the whatever, like the wrist little like squeezing like devices.
Yeah, he kept doing that, like, to strengthen his hand for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, for his, like, weird biting martial arts. And they're just in the car, like, bobbing their heads to music and, like, going to different... like, what is this... What is
every,
it like?
And as Ben said, every gang is, like, they went to the guy who created the gangs for Predator 2 and said, can you make them less, like, more intolerant? Is that an option? Instead of a Jamaican gang, can we go to a gang where it's just all just what appeared to be kind of regular-looking black men just in a club and they all have guns? Like, they didn't really look like gangsters. They just looked like a group of black men enjoying music. And then they go to, like, a Chinese or, like, the Yakuza or something. I can't figure out what the hell.
And I love that they just show up. Real
racist. And then they, like, show up and move into a hotel.
They seem to just show up and, like, knock on the door and be like, hey, gang, we're a different gang. Can we chat? Like, as if that's how it works.
Like, yeah, as if, like, gangs also just have, like, a hideout you can just walk up to. Like, they're in, like, a Bennigan's or something.
And
like, we gotta go find the gang. Where are they at? The Tim Hortons on 6th.
And Pose, as someone who's probably spent some time in a church in their life, have you ever been to, I mean, just generally estimate to me, how much purple neon do you typically see in a Catholic church?
Yeah, considering he was wearing a Catholic priest collar, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say usually none, usually zero.
I mean,
zero to
I'm
less
convinced
than zero.
That's not a church. That is definitely like a church themed nightclub called Confessions.
Yeah, the confessional. You want to meet me down there? Oh,
let's
give me some penance.
Let's head over to Hail Mary. Yeah, penance for sure. Penance. It gets wild at penance after 12.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get over this. And again, this is another scene where
they introduced a character for 4 seconds that has nothing to do with the film. Just introduce a character. Because there wasn't enough of them. We needed one more random guy.
And that leads...
And then
like,
they were like... He was like, you're a long way from the seminary. And I was like... Wait,
huh?
Frank Cassidy was studying to be he has a wife and kids. When the fuck was this? Because you look like you're 12 years younger than this dude. Like, when was he in the seminary? That's when I was like, when that scene happened, I for a second was like, wait, what the fuck's going on? I rewound it because I was like, I think I stopped paying attention or I somehow skipped to the Daredevil movie. But yeah, that was really wild. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's talk real quick about the very ending of the film.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go, with the shootout hostage rescue scene.
So
yeah.
After, like, watching two old men fighting in a bar after they're drunk, Frank Castle versus LBJ, he runs in, and they've got a gun pointed at Micro and a gun pointed at the little girl's head, and the Punisher comes in, and basically they end up giving him, like, a choice. So, like, you've got one bullet. You can either kill Micro or the girl. Like, you gotta decide which one you're gonna kill. Which, there's two. There's the mom and the daughter, so I don't know how you're supposed to kill both of them. But, like, in my mind, I was like, oh, he's gonna do something fucking sweet to save them both. No, he just lets them shoot Micro.
What the fuck? We've seen his, like, expertise with a gun. It seemed totally plausible that he could have shot them both.
It feels like he could have shot the one and then just thrown the gun at the other guy so he missed or something. And I was like, what was the point of killing Micro? Like, it didn't serve any purpose for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like, there was no, like, emotional payoff then. And then Micro's dead and the Punisher just, like, leaves. There's no moment where he, like, goes over and is like, I'm sorry, man. And I was just like, boy, what a weird scene to just throw into a movie for, like, no reason. And it, like, really just made the Punisher seem dumb. Like, he ran into a room, like, what if there was, like, 20 guys in there with machine guns? He ran in with 4 bullets? The ending was, like, where I was like, okay, this movie got really
dumb. He dropped so many guns. And again, he had enough bullets and he had the expertise to shoot them both. If you're a person, even if you're a person who's been in gunfights, you don't want to have a gun pointed at you, ever. Like, so the idea that, like, alright, Punisher, the guy known for killing, the person who just fought through 500 people, you can keep your gun, but just point it at one of these two people that I'm standing 1 inch from, and by the way, don't shoot me. Like, I mean, it doesn't make... What kind of plan is that? Like, I can only imagine them discussing this before he came in, and be like, oh, Punisher's gonna come in here, we're gonna put a gun, in front of the girl. I'm like, am I gonna be like using the girl as a human shield? No, you'll be fully exposed, standing over. The Punisher could probably shoot you by accident while shooting one
There's
of the
There's a chance
people
when he runs in, he just shoots one of us because, like, instead of waiting, because he's not known for deliberating. Like, he's not a cautious killer. He just shoots people as soon as he hears a toilet.
Like, they're not in a defensive position. They're not behind the hostages. They're not using superior firepower. There aren't extra guys in there, like you mentioned. They're just standing there in the full open, as vulnerable as can be. And this was their headquarters and their plan. Like,
yeah. It's just a pretty weak plan. Because, like, yeah. They're like, we want him to suffer. It's like, don't you just want to kill him?
And they're tied up with these, like, Looney Tunes-sized ropes.
They're tied up with, like, the ropes that go on, like, stanchions in movie theater, you know? Like, the velvet rope.
Velvet club ropes they got from Confessions.
Like, when he cut it, yeah. Meanwhile, Confessions is utter chaos. The bouncers are having a hard time keeping people in line. That priest was getting ready to do his nightly dance on stage, and now it's all fucked up.
And we get an extra shot of
come
of
check
the neon.
Out my cassock, boys.
We get an extra shot of
priest ropes
of the neon church at the end when the Punisher
also,
randomly kills a mugger.
Catholic churches don't have neon signs that say Jesus saved. That's not a thing that are on the outside of Catholic churches. That's not how Catholic churches work.
And
that's
how much?
That's like a mission, you know, that'd be like a place that homeless people could go to that is run by like a non-profit church or something. It wouldn't be on the outside of a Catholic, like on like see like a beautiful like basilica or cathedral, and then attached to it is a very shoddy Jesus.
Jesus rules
like
in neon.
It looks like a T.
Yeah, I really
no
love
outline.
It
just says Jesus saves. So
the Jesus saves cross was great because I also love that it cuts out, you know, the Jesus to show us saves. I kind of wish it cut out saves. It just said Jesus as he murders someone, just to really confuse the audience. You know,
That I would have agreed with that. I would have been like, because like when that happened, I was like, oh, it said saves, and then you hear the gunshot. I was like, oh, guys, come on. So I guess, Ben, let's ask the question. I'm sure no one can guess the answer to. Should people watch this?
No. Watch the Dolph Lundgren one over this one. I would honestly say,
at this point, the Dolph Lundgren one, best Punisher. Short of the Netflix TV show.
Yeah.
Movie-wise, best Punisher.
Movie-wise, we'll go watch Lundgren first.
Lundgren, see his balls hanging out during the scene.
Yeah, then Thomas Jane, and then just do this one.
Just watch Dolph Lundgren's.
That's probably all you need.
Yeah, I would not recommend watching it.
No, either. I would not remotely recommend watching this. I thought it just genuinely. I know Pogues.
Good. I was just not as angry. Like, there's been movies I've watched where I've been like, why the fuck? Like, I remember when we watched Suicide Squad, I was like genuinely angry while we were. I was like, why are we watching this, man? Like, this is just so fucking annoying.
There's something about like a bad adaption and then also bad movie making.
the acting is just an extra level. Very confusing. So I guess come back next week and you'll see what movie Ben will be angry about then.
I'm podcasting here.